The U.S. voted last night to recommend criminal contempt charges against former Trump White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. That's after Meadows reversed on an agreement to cooperate with the House committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. Before the reversal, Meadows had turned over records to the committee, including text messages he exchanged with conservative figures on the day of the Capitol attacks. The committee released some of those messages to the public this week, and now some are saying the messages show a disparity between how Trump allies have talked about the riots privately versus in public. It's the Week in Washington. We'll talk about that story and more. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Should Trump allies and former staff members be cooperating with this investigation, or do you agree that they shouldn't testify? What do you make of how Trump allies were talking about January 6th in private versus what they said in public? What do you want to see happen to the people who helped plan the January 6th insurrection? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Amanda Turkle is the Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost. Amanda, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Can you talk us through how this vote shook out last night?
Sure. Well, not surprisingly, it broke down basically along party lines. Democrats voted to hold Mark Meadows in contempt, and Republicans voted against it, except for two Republicans, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, who are both, they've both been Trump critics, and they serve on the January 6th committee investigating all this. So it's not surprising that they align themselves with Democrats.
And what's the significance of former White House chief of staff being recommended for criminal contempt charges? We've also seen some other figures, including Steve Bannon, referred, but this is a highly placed official, or was, in the Trump administration.
Right. And I think for some people, you know, Bannon seems honestly an obvious case. He wasn't working in the White House at the time. His claims to executive privilege are sort of baffling. Again, he didn't work in government. Mark Meadows is, I think, a slightly more complicated case. He was White House chief of staff. He, you know, arguably has some claim to executive privilege. But I think what the committee is saying is that he, you know, had already been cooperating. He said he would cooperate. He was handing over documents, including text messages and emails. He has written a book where he obviously tells quite a bit about what he was doing in the White House, but he refuses to sit down for an interview. And so that is why Congress decided to hold him in contempt, because he basically, they're saying, stopped cooperating. Is all of this subject to executive privilege when he's already handed over so much and he's been writing this book? I think that Congress, you know, the Democratic Party and these Republicans determined that, you know, he doesn't have a case. And now it's up to the Justice Department about whether they want to pursue the contempt referral.
Talking to Amanda Turkle from HuffPost, Washington Bureau Chief there, looking at some of the top stories in national politics, including this vote yesterday to refer Mark Meadows, former Trump Chief of Staff, for charges of contempt. That goes to the Justice Department now. I want to listen to some of the text messages Meadows turned over to the committee. Republican Representative Liz Cheney shared some of the ones that Meadows received on January 6th. Here's one Fox News host, Laura Ingraham, sent to Meadows on January 6th.
Quote, Mark, the president needs to tell people in the Capitol to go home. This is hurting all of us. He is destroying his legacy, Laura Ingraham wrote.
Can you talk about that and some of the other messages that Representative Cheney shared as part of last night's proceedings?
Yeah, so this was one of the most striking things, was to hear all of these Fox News personalities trying to get Mark Meadows to tell Trump to stop the riot at the Capitol. And that seems to be some indication that they know that these people are Trump supporters and he has the power to stop it because they'll listen to him. And what's jarring about this is because it's so different than everything else we've been hearing on Fox News about how January 6th was a false flag attempt, about how these people were patriots. You know, this has nothing to do with Trump. Privately, clearly, we now know that these same Fox News hosts were contacting the White House and telling Trump, this is bad. You need to tell your people to cut it out. So again, it just goes against everything that they've been doing publicly and that they have irresponsibly been trying to fan the flames that this was no big deal when privately, you know, we saw that day they were freaking out.
I want to give a listen now to Laura Ingraham responding on her show yesterday. Here is a listen.
Both publicly and privately, I said what I believe, that the breach of the Capitol on January 6th was a terrible thing. Crimes were committed. Some people were unfairly hounded and persecuted and prosecuted, but it was not an insurrection.
Some people have pointed to Art Ingraham pointing the fingers at Antifa on the evening of January 6th over the insurrection, though. What is the talk about the discrepancy you were mentioning, Amanda, between those private messages to Meadows and what came out in the media?
Yeah, I mean, you know, on January 6th, she said people who can only be there, it was perpetrated by people who can only be described as antithetical to the MAGA movement. Now, they were likely not all Trump supporters, and like you said, the Antifa stuff. Sean Hannity said at the top of his January 6th show, I don't care. I don't know who they are. They're not people I would support. So, you know, sure, they're not saying like it's great to storm the Capitol, but they're also trying very, very, they never pinned the blame publicly on Trump. They never said that he should have stopped it sooner than he did. They didn't condemn the fact that he never really, you know, that his tweets didn't go very far. And if anything, to sort of, you know, sort of seemed to condone what these people were doing. When again, privately, they were telling Trump, this is really bad. You need to make a statement and stop it. Again, privately, conceding that he had some responsibility here.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Brad is with us in Pleasant Prairie. Brad, hi.
Hi. I think if anybody knows anything about Donald Trump, he rules his domain with an iron fist. And I cannot for a second believe that all of these underlings did something without his express approval and support. The way he runs his business, it may be sloppy. He may not make money, but in some cases, but he is the absolute king.
Brad, thanks for the call. And that reminds me, Representative Cheney had also said at the hearings yesterday, Mr. Meadows' testimony will bear on another key question before this committee. Did Donald Trump, through action or inaction, corruptly seek to obstruct or impede Congress's official proceeding to count electoral votes? End quote. Is there a sense, as Brad was saying and as Representative Cheney was saying, that there's still efforts to look at former President Trump's responsibility for the events on January 6th?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, you know, a lot of this goes to the point Brad was making was, you know, all of this stuff that Meadows is doing, for example, and cooperating, not cooperating, how much is he talking to Trump about this? How much does he have Trump's, you know, backing to stop cooperating? You know, same with Steve Bannon, same with these other officials. You know, how much is Trump pulling the strings and how nervous are they about running afoul of him? And I mean, and that's sort of the same issue that continues to come up as we see some of these documents. We saw that there was something from Mark Meadows saying that the military will be on standby to protect pro-Trump people, referring to January 6th. Now, there's not a lot of context around that. We don't know who he was talking to. We don't know exactly what it was about. But was that something Meadows was just saying? Was that something that came directly from the president? And so, yeah, you know, I think that's what people are looking at a lot on the committee is how much was Trump directly behind this?
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Jim now in Dubuque. Jim, hi.
Hi. Two issues. I wonder what your guest thinks of Representative Schiff presenting false information and showing some of the emails. He added things that weren't there in the original, and he left out a couple of paragraphs of continuation on one of the emails that put it in a better context. And I'm also wondering why they're resisting allowing these subpoenas to be evaluated by the judicial system and the court when it may be that the whole procedure is illegitimate because they did not follow their own rules and allowed Nancy Pelosi to select the Republican representatives that they wanted.
Jim, thanks for the call. First of all, he's saying Representative Schiff had added or deleted information in some of the emails?
I'm not familiar what he's talking about there, but I'm happy to address the next part.
Sure.
So, you know, the Pelosi ended up choosing the Republicans because she tried to go forward with a bipartisan committee modeled after the 9/11 commission, which was also a bipartisan effort. And I believe the way it worked was that because Democrats are in the majority, they would have picked the chair and the Republicans would have picked the vice chair. They came up with legislation that was had the backing of some Republicans, and a Republican actually helped write the legislation, but then Republicans rejected it. And so Pelosi felt that she needed to go forward with some sort of commission to examine January 6th. So it ended up being a very partisan one because Republicans wouldn't support the bipartisan one, which again, members of their own party had worked on. And in terms of going to court, I mean, you know, Steve Bannon, he's been charged with two counts of criminal contempt of Congress. He's scheduled to stand trial on July 18th. The Justice Department will decide now whether they go forward with anything against Meadows or not. And then he will also face the judicial system. So, you know, these individuals are actually facing the justice system, and they are going to trial if the Justice Department decides to pursue charges against them.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Amanda Turkel from HuffPost with us today for our weekly roundup of the top stories in Washington. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Should Congress be in session on the anniversary of the January 6th insurrection? There's talk in Congress on whether they should be there or not, symbolically or for a normal business day. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our look at some of the top stories in national politics. Amanda Turkel stays with us from HuffPost. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234 on the January 6th committee and the Mark Meadows a referral for prosecution for not responding to the subpoena. Lisa is with us in Madison. Lisa, hi.
Hi. I'm just calling in regard to Mark Meadows and the fact that not only was he using his personal phone, but he was sending texts via an app that only the users could unlock the text, the message, and that none of this had been sent to the National Archives. And that's also when Mark Meadows decided to stop cooperating when the requests were made for those. And the other interesting feature is so many people have wondered why Trump didn't send help for that 187 minutes. And based on text he sent the night before and that length of period of time, it almost seems that he was hoping counter protesters could show up. And that would give him the ability in any ensuing violence to declare martial law.
Lisa, thanks for that call. First of all, Amanda, I think she's referring to the Signal app that Mark Meadows was using. And one of the texts sent to him and revealed by the Congressional Committee said something, 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 then check your Signal, apparently, for further communication.
Yes, right. That's what they, what government officials and other government officials use it specifically to avoid open records requests. I mean, you know, Trump, what we're seeing come out of these documents is that, you know, it seems the fact that, you know, some officials try to say we didn't know what was going to happen, you know, this violence was appalling. It seems like they were well aware that there could be something like this. There was the former defense secretary who said in a January 3rd conversation with Trump that Trump has told him basically to do whatever was necessary to protect the demonstrators that were, you know, coming to Washington and coming to the Capitol. You know, Trump seemed aware that there was perhaps going to be some violence and something, and he wanted to use the military. He or his administration wanted to use the military to back them up, which, you know, we've seen him use the military in the past to clear out, you know, Lafayette Park right in front of the White House so he could walk across and do the photo op with the Bible. And so, you know, it's not surprising that he brought it up again.
Thanks for your calls on that issue. I want to move on to some other stories, including one related one you've been following, Amanda. what Congress is going to do on January 6th, 2022. What kind of things are members of Congress talking about?
So right now, the House is scheduled to be out of session and the Senate is scheduled to be in session. And lawmakers we've talked to seem a little bit torn about the messages this sends. Senator Susan Collins said that she would not be in session. She said, "You never know when someone may decide to mark the anniversary. I just think that day is too freighted with anxiety and anger, and it would just be better if we did not have any sort of anniversary of that day." We talked to other senators who say we absolutely should be here. I talked to Congresswoman Susan Wild from Pennsylvania. She's a Democratic congresswoman. And I don't know if folks remember, but there was a picture of her lying on the ground looking like she was having a heart attack or a panic attack in the House gallery as the riot was underway. And she is part of this small group of lawmakers known as the gallery group, lawmakers who were stuck in there that day, and they talk. And she said that she believes that they should be back to show that they weren't scared away. They're not afraid of coming back on January 6th. But there are other members who, you know, are quite traumatized by what happened even a year later and don't really want to be there. So there's a lot of talk about what will be done that day, if anything. And I think, honestly, some Republicans are a little nervous that Democrats will use that day to remind people what happened, which, you know, doesn't always reflect well on them and their defense of Trump.
Talking to Amanda Turkle from HuffPost, looking at a few of the top stories in the nation's capital this week. A check-in, Amanda, on the Build Back Better package. This is part two of the spending packages supported by the Biden administration. The infrastructure one is a done deal now. The other one, the social safety net, climate change, other stuff. Seems like the situation hasn't changed that much. Where are we right now?
Well, today was a pretty messy day in the Senate, actually, on this. The Senate has imposed a Christmas deadline. Democrats wanted to pass this by Christmas. Honestly, right now, their big stumbling block is Joe Manchin. And today, he and Biden have been talking this week, and it doesn't seem like it's going all that well. There are now indications that Manchin, the Build Back Better legislation extends the child tax credit for 1 year. And the word was that this was a compromise because Senator Manchin wanted a work requirement attached. The rest of the Democrats said no. And so the compromise, okay, we'll just do it for one more year. But now Manchin is saying that he, supposedly saying that he doesn't want the child tax credit in the legislation at all. There's some concern that he thinks this is a budget gimmick to lower the cost, which again, he is the one who has wanted the cost lowered. And so I think Democrats are really frustrated that they feel like Manchin is a bit of a bad faith negotiator and there's no pleasing him. The goalposts keep changing. Supporters of Manchin are saying, no, he's been clear all along that he wants the cost lower, but he doesn't want it. He also thinks Democrats should basically be doing fewer programs for longer. So the indications we're getting is this is not going to be happening by Christmas. It's going to be pushed into the new year. And then, honestly, I don't know if Democrats will have the appetite to keep fighting over this. They're going to need to turn their attention to the midterms. This is pretty messy, and it doesn't really seem to help them a lot at the ballot. So progress right now is a bit stalled.
Is there any sign of maybe a last-ditch effort to get in by Christmas, or does it seem like Senate leadership is starting to set people up to say, no, it's not going to happen by then?
They are still, you know, they are still working on it and they're still trying. We had Senator Ron Wyden today concede that it's, on the Finance Committee conceding that it will probably be next year. And so I think some people are getting frustrated. I think people aren't very hopeful because, again, it's just, you know, what they could do is if they can't reach a deal with Manchin is just put it on the floor and say, look, we're going to do this by Christmas. We're calling your bluff. Are you really going to be the one to vote against this and knock down this bill, or are you going to actually support it? And so that's one option, and you know that seems to be the only way because it doesn't seem like they're close to a deal with him right now.
And just our last minute or so, Amanda, a story you've been following: blockage in the Senate for many Biden appointees. Movement on that. It looks like with a Wisconsin connection, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett cleared a Senate committee in his appointments to an ambassadorship. What's been going on, though, with some blocked or at least delayed nominees?
Well, there have been some Republican senators, Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, Tom Cotton, Rand Paul, to name a few, who have been in various ways blocking Biden nominees. And they're all doing this through regular rules. But, you know, the Biden administration is getting frustrated. They have had 38% of their nominees confirmed. That's compared to 50% at this time for Trump, 68% for Obama. And so, you know, they're getting pretty frustrated that a lot of these nominees are being held up for unrelated reasons, policy differences, for example, with the administration, rather than allowing these folks to get a fair up or down vote based on their merits.
Amanda, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Been talking to Amanda Turkle. She's the Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost. She was with us today for our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. You can follow breaking news at WPR.org and over at NPR.org, where they also have their eyes on the latest news from Congress.